and welcome to the Weekly Scroll Podcast. My name is Ryan.
And I'm Conan the Barbarian.
And today, we are going to be going over Advanced Dungeon Goons from...
Let me hold mine too. Hold on. I actually can hold up... So I got the Adventure Pack.
Oh, you mean like this? This one right here?
You're such a fucking nerd that you have the one unopened one so you can keep the unopened.
We have we're going over Advanced Dungeon Goons from Jacob Fleming at gelatinouscubism.com. If we would have remembered, we would have done this last week and just bumped Vermhack by week because...
Oh.
Exactly. Advanced Dungeon Goons was just running a Kickstarter during ZineQuest called Castle... I think it's Elkenstone.
Elkenstone.
Elkenstone is what it was called. Which reminded us how awesome this game is and how much we love it. But it just finished the campaign this morning. I got the email this morning early that did the whole, like, you have reached your funding goal, blah, 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 blah. So I don't know if there will be pre-orders for it, but I highly advise you to go check it out. Go to gelatinouscubism.com. I think you can get these. The Advanced Dungeon Goon booklets, we'll go over more of this in just a second, are also available at Exalted Funerals. We'll talk about that too. But Advanced Dungeon Goons, second edition, is a game from Jacob Fleming. It is the second edition of Dungeon Goons, which is a Tunnel Goons hack, originally written by Nate Treem. One of my favorite games, one of the best games, in my opinion, in all of DTRPGs. Dude, honestly, you're starting to make games for all those out there that are thinking about doing games, just do a Tunnel Goons hack to start. Honestly, then you'll understand. Tunnel Goons is one of my favorite games and one of the games early in TTRPGs that made me like break me out of some of the D&D brainness of 5e where I was seeking something different. And I went, oh, wait a minute. 2d6, and then just the difference is this is crazy. Tunnel Goons and Maze Rats, two of the early ones that really made me want to play the rules like games. So that's what we're doing today, Advanced Tunnel Goons. So for those in podcast land, go look at it. But for those watching, as we said, it's a little booklet. I believe it's basically A6, but landscape, right?
Oh, yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's basically A6, but landscape. It doesn't have page numbers, but the PDF is 24 pages. So that's my assumption, is it's roughly around there. If you get the entire adventure pack that we were just talking about, it comes in it's like the plastic with the cardboard holder at the top.
Hangers,
like a hanger. Yeah. Yeah.
You get next to the, you're going to go to the checkout. You see some toys hanging up and you're like, hey mom, can I get this little action figure in this like plastic thing? It's one of those.
Yeah. So dope. And if you get the whole pack, it comes with it comes with the adventure. It comes with four character sheets. It comes with a Rizzo printed adventure. Little hex crawl and dungeon adventure called the Shrine of the Scorpion Lords. Beautiful. I love the Rizzo printing on this, the orange on the yellow.
This is like, I love the fold out, like full page, like map of the tomb on this. Yeah, it's this whole pack's very cool.
Well, it's really cool because it's the same size as the book. And if you just, it's folded into fours, it's one sheet folded into fours. If you just open it once, like you're opening the book, you get the hex crawl. Then if you open up to the inside of that, the dungeon takes up the entire one half the page. So it's really cool that you can do the X crawl and then get into the dungeon without seeing it beforehand. So that's cool. And the last thing it comes with is 2d6. So basically you get everything you could possibly need to play this game, except for maybe like a pencil to fill out your character sheet just to run in this. And I believe this entire set on Exalted is only like $12.
Yeah, it's $12. Yeah. I'm like, oh, that's
such a good deal. Yeah, I'm gonna buy like five of these, and just anytime someone's like, oh, you play tabletop games, or I meet someone like at work or something that's like kind of into it, I'm just gonna be like, here you go, bud. And just get them on the right track. But that's what it looks like. I highly recommend going for $12. You can't get because there's also an adventure in the back of the book, so you get two adventures.
Right. Yeah, there's it was like Geiger's
Gorge peak, or something like that.
Whatever, I don't know. Gate, I also say like
we were both wrong.
Gate. As we go through this, like this is a great like lightweight old school hack, and you know what? You could take if you have any adventure on your shelf, just because like the Tunnel Goons framework is so lightweight on like how you pick difficulty, you could take any adventure that you already own, and you could just be like, we're gonna run Advanced Dungeon Goons this, and I mean, you could make up a lot of difficulties on the fly, like you know how hard a thing is, you know?
Yeah, it's super. You know what I'm actually gonna do is. Is going to be a really quick episode. We always say that, and then it's 2 hours long.
It's going to be 2 hours.
One thing I want to do, we're going to look at Tunnel Goons real quick, because it's literally like 2 pages long, and then we're going to start cruising this. So let's go ahead and do that. Let me bring up Tunnel Goons. And let's get cracking. So this is not the game we're going over. This is the game it's based on. This is Tunnel Goons from Neat Dream. So just so you know the differences early on for this. So in this, we're not going to go over the mechanics here because we'll just tell which ones are pulled over in the next one. But basically, it goes over action rolls, difficulty scores, actions, inventory, death, advancement, healing, your abilities, the character creation. And then in this one, you roll D6s to determine like your background stuff. That also gives you your first inventory slot, your first piece of equipment. But it gives you a childhood, a profession, and what you did during the war, which is just one of the coolest pieces of like built-in like
just implied lore.
Lore ever. Yeah, it's great. And that's the entire game. That is all of Tunnel Goons, and it's genius. It's one of the most genius fucking games ever, in period. Honestly, it takes up two square pages. It's amazing. That's it. And what Advanced Dungeon Goons does, we'll click over to that, is it makes Tunnel Goons into what amounts to a dungeon delver. So,
yeah, in a great way.
Yeah, if you just read the back of Advanced Dungeon Goons, it says Advanced Dungeon Goons is a rules-light classic fantasy tabletop adventure game for two or more players based on Tunnel Goons from Neat Dream. So it takes that core of Tunnel Goons and makes it a dungeon delver, which is cool. So let's get into it. First off, Jacob Fleming is a fantastic artist, and all the art throughout is theirs.
Yeah, I dude, and one thing consistently through all of the art that I love that like comic book pencil-esque shading on everything, and like it gives it so much character all the way through. But this first piece with the giant spider and like the barbarian and the fighter and the mage or whatever, really a great piece, you know, very old school dungeon crawler.
Yeah. Well, Jacob Fleming does comics and stuff too. I actually got one from, I think it's Peregrine Coast, with a guy that's remarkably similar to this little dwarf guy. I think it's called Slayer, the comic is.
I think I've seen that.
Yeah, it's dope. So I got that. I should have grabbed it and shown it on stream. But again, the book is Landscape A6, so it's a small little landscape book. You can still fit in your pocket. And right off the bat, we get to the next page. And I also love this like reddish like color scheme to the entire thing.
Yeah, the very limited color palette. It's really just that like orange, red, black, and white, and it works incredibly well.
Yeah, well, and also when you get the PDF of this, like when you get the digital versions of this, you get this version that's colored. You get a black and white print friendly version, which is great, and you get the character sheet printing. So honestly, 24 pages, you could easily take this to like a printer somewhere and print this out and hand it around the table easy. But this is, it shows a girl walking into a portal on this. It says playing the game. I also like the digital text font, like the pixel font that it uses. It's like a 1-bit pixel font or whatever. It's really cool. So right off the bat, we're getting into basically roughly wordish for word, like Tunnel Goons to start the game. So again, game structure, action roll, dangerous action, save roll, all that stuff. Only some slight differences and stuff like that throughout. So
yeah,
game
one of the differences they add here is for in the difficulties, they add very hard.
They also have very easy too.
Oh, there is also very easy. Yeah. There are a lot more modifiers as we go through this for like actions and such.
Oh yeah. The difficulty score lines in Tunnel Goons, which I've clicked back to on the screen, is just we'll get to that in a second. So first thing is game structure. It basically says there's referees and there's players. You know what the fuck that means. Action roll. This is one of my favorite mechanics in all of games, like period. When an action success is uncertain, a player rolls 2d6 and adds points from the relevant class and a point from any item that are relevant to the action. If the total is equal or greater than the difficulty score, DS, which is what it's going to be used throughout the game, it is successful. Difficulty scores are rated as follows. Very easy is a 6, easy is an 8, moderate is a 10, hard is a 12, very hard is a 14. And Tunnel Goons, they just have easy, moderate, and hard, 8, 10, and 12. I don't mind that there's the very easy and very hard, but whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I personally don't think that you need the very easy, but the very hard, I think for this one does make more sense.
Because you have more modifiers to get that out.
Yeah. You have like their weapons count for a little bit more, especially like big weapons. And also like there's more of like a breadth of like, well, if you fight a lich, you know, a lich is very hard and that could happen because this is a weird dungeon crawler, like classic fantasy.
Yeah, completely agree. It was probably just for the sake of some symmetry. If you're going to add like a very hard, might as well put a very easy. So it doesn't bother me. That's fine.
Yeah.
I do also like that, like, the background in all of this isn't black. Even the cover, even though it kind of looks black, it's not black. It's like an off black with like maybe like the smidgest bit of like brown in it. And I just think and even the white is like a slightly off white. So it's not stark on your eyes. You know, does that make sense? Like it doesn't burn into your retinas. Yeah. I don't think it's white white. I think it's like just like a shade off of just like a flat white. It's
eggshell, you know?
Somewhere around there, yeah. so then you have game structure, action, where you got dangerous actions. If an action has a risk of physical danger, the difference between the roll and difficulty score is the damage you take. So basically, the action roll, how you really do, and then there's a save roll, which is the exact same thing. But basically, the difference between an action roll and a save roll is an action is something you're choosing to do, and a save roll is when something's happening to you that you're trying to avoid. Right, that's really the only difference. Otherwise, the mechanics are the same. You're resisting something and then adding the appropriate stat or whatever. So basically, the core mechanic, the core resolution mechanic of the game is 2d6 for a difficulty score. And if you succeed, if you get on or above, and you fail, if you get less than, right? And the damage you take or do is the difference between the two. I don't know if there's an example of play in this one, but in Tunnel Goons there is. So the example would be like, say you roll 2d6 against a difficulty of 8. You roll a 10. That means you do 2 damage. Easy peasy. There's also, we'll get to it in a little bit. Character creation. So there's 5 steps to character creation. You get 1 is just your health points. It's 10 plus brute. 2, you start with an inventory of 8. So in Tunnel Goons, I think it's just, I think your health is just a flat 10 to start, right? Yeah. Health is 10, inventory is 8. And in Dungeon Goons, health is 10 plus brute, which is your physical stat. Inventory is 8. And then you get 2 points to distribute between 3, they call them classes. It's interesting in Tunnel Goons that they make them classes instead of like attributes.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's just a word choice, but it kind of is the same thing.
It is the same thing, but it's also interesting because brute and sage definitely sound like classes to me, but dexterity does not sound like a class to me. To further expound upon that, if you put 2 points into sage, you can't actually take the class conjurer, which we'll get to in a second, but
Yeah. I mean,
the thing is, I'm saying this, but I don't dislike this. I do. I like this fine. I wish it was something else other than dexterity, but I do like this, so.
Yeah, but I mean, even in Tunnelgoons, it's Brute, Skulker, and Erudite, unerudite could be that, but you could also be erudite. So it's like, but I completely agree. I mean, I wouldn't have minded getting away from that class idea and just making it attributes and having it be just like, you know, strength, dex, and wisdom or whatever, giving it a little bit more of like a dungeon feel. And especially because, like you said, you can be a conjurer, you know?
Yeah.
It would be cool because you could also do a hack for a fighter class and a dex class too. If you start with two of one or the other, you could get a little bonus or whatever, but whatever. So those are the three. You get to distribute 2 points between Brute, which is your fighting, feats of strength and hardiness, dexterity, which is sneaking, aiming, and balancing, and sage, which is studying, perception, speaking, and potentially magic. That's number three. Number four is just name your character. And number five is purchase starting equipment. So you get to start with two rations, a cloak of your color of choice, which is from Tunnelgoons.
It's a great part of Tunnelgoons. I don't know why, but like I always enjoy that part. And when we've played Tunnelgoons with my table, they've been like, yeah, my cloak's purple for this character. I'm like, yeah, go off, dude.
Yeah. It's such another really fantastic piece of like built-in lore that's not explained, but is so, everyone I know is just like, that's like the cutest fucking part. Like, it's like, no, but I wanted the red cloak. And it's like, yeah, okay, your little guy's got a red cloak. That's fine. But you start with two rations, a cloak, and then you get 2d6 times 10 silver pieces. Why don't you roll me 2d6 times 10?
Oh, yeah. Dude, you know what? I'm actually going to roll the green tunnel goons.
Yeah. Roll the dice.
Yeah.
I got 6 total. So I got 60.
I got 5. So I got 50.
Okay. So it says there's an asterisk. It says Dungeon Goons is a silver standard, and that's it. There's no other coin. Fuck it. It's just silver. Great. Love it. Give me a silver standard.
Shout out that. Thanks for not making me have to count. Like, okay, so I have 100 copper. So that's 1 silver, whatever.
Yeah. So there is an equipment list, which anyone that listened to the show knows how I feel about that. This is the part that like is fine, but I think could be changed. I would change, but we'll go over it real quick. So you have weapons, great weapons and armor, heavy armor, shield to start, as far as, let's just say that like your fighting gear shit, right? So weapons cost 20 silver, and that's all your basic shit. Swords, hammers, bows, axes, spears, that's it. Then you get great weapons, which are 40 silver. They're all your two-handed weapons. They add +3 to brute rolls, but only +1 to on defend rolls, and they count as 2 inventory slots. So don't forget, you only start with 8. Armor is 20 silver. It adds 1 to defense rolls, but also subtracts 1 from dex rolls, which I love. Heavy armor, 40 silver. It's 2 and 2, 2 for defend rolls, but subtracts 2 from dexterity. Again, love that. A shield is 10 silver, held in your offhand. And then you have adventuring gear, which is 2 silver each, which is like basic shit. Ropes, chalk, parchment, shit like that. You have tools, which are 5 silver each. Crowbars, traps, lockpicks, grappling hooks, things like that. You have occult items, which are 10 silver each, which is like vials of holy water, ritual ingredients, things like that. And then you have horses, which it lists mule and then riding horse, 30 and 100 silver. Carts are 30 silver, and they have an inventory of 10. So if you actually can get a cart, you increase your inventory for everyone. Mm-hmm. There's water, transportation, boats and shit. I don't give a shit about that. So you start with, in Tunnelgoons, you roll for your backgrounds and stuff that gives you starting items. In this game, it's kind of, again, more of a dungeon game.
Yeah, it's silver buy. I do. Yeah. I like that, actually. I love, like, having to be like, okay, like, what's the build for this character going to be? I would probably make some quick builds, though, just for a game where your characters are going to die. Like, have some, like, if you have 20 silver, here's this pack, or 50 silver, just because it speeds things up.
Yeah. I mean, Yeah, I don't mind this because I do think it's kind of interesting that adventuring gear and tools are different cost. Is what's on that mug?
Oh, don't worry about it. It's not my mug.
What is it though?
It's a Harry Potter mug.
Oh yeah, fuck that. Never mind.
It's not mine. Don't judge me.
For a second, I saw something, I thought it was a Blasphemous mug, and I was like, "You're gonna send me that mug, you motherfucker!" But nope. Yeah, no. Fuck that turf cunt. I do think it's interesting that the adventuring gear and the tools have different costs, and it's not like crazy different, but it's enough to make you know that the tools are like more helpful, grappling hooks right. and shit like that. So I do think it's interesting. I do think what you said is it would be an interesting thing to do, though. Honestly, is I would just roll up like what's the minimum that you can get, like 20 silver.
Yeah,
I would just build a 20, a 30, a 40, a 50, a 60, you know, a 70, 80, whatever. And then just if someone dies, just be like, yeah, just take the roll your dice and just take the 30 or take the 40 or whatever, you know, like don't pick and choose that bullshit every fucking time.
It is amazing how many of my like growing game design ideas are just me stealing stuff from Luke Gearing. So,
Inventory, your score is what you can carry. You can carry as much as you want, but this is how much you can carry comfortably. So every item you have over 8, or if your inventory ever advances, reduces your brute or dexterity roll by 1 for every item. So if your inventory is 8 and you're carrying 10, every brute and dex roll you roll has a -2 to it every time. So that's it. And then the magic page. Love this art.
Yeah. A old man wizard with flame is good. So magic. Let's talk about magic. That's right. Hunter is going to talk about the magic part. Y'all ever watch an episode of this show where I talk about the magic? This is one of those. So, the Conjurer. So this is the interesting thing, right? If you invest 2 points into Sage, you can be a conjurer. A conjurer wields magic and bends it to their will. Basically, you pick what type of magic you do, like a realm, like a focus of magic. And the examples they give are fire, cold, nature, necromancy, divine, illusion, whatever. Pick a thing. You're that type of wizard. And whenever a player character uses magic, they describe what effect their spells will have. And then the referee will then determine 2 things. The first one, does this spell require a roll? Probably yes, right? Otherwise, the spell effect happens as the player describes. So I would say like for like innocuous little like hedge magic shit, like just to dress up.
Light a fire, turn on a torch.
Right.
Yeah.
To be a wizard, it costs nothing. You're just doing the little things, right? And I personally, when you're playing a magic caster, find those things deeply meaningful because it makes you actually feel like you're magical because you are. And then the second thing that you pick is what is the spell's DS. And so you and the referee can figure out what is a fair difficulty, or if it's appropriate, you can roll over the difficulty of an enemy that you're fighting, kind of whatever makes sense within that context. The referee can use the target's DS as basis. Yeah, like I just said, if it makes sense to do so. If the situation dictates, the referee may increase this longer range, trying to change reality, if you're doing something big to the enemy, etc. And then the player uses their Sage class to test for the casting of the spell, which seems evident, but it is written.
Yeah, I like this. I think this is an extraordinarily clean magic system that fits so well within the context of like the DS and things like that, but it's still like freeform enough that I would really enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, I very much agree. I was like, this is I always am looking for that open-ended take on magic. That's just like, yeah, you guys talk out what you think the difficulty is. I'm like, oh, perfect. Great. I want to do this. And I do like that it has you lay out a realm because like, having played some open-ended magic games with people, if you don't have them claim what kind of magic they do, they have a really hard time conceptualizing it. So,
yeah. Well, and I also just like the having the spell DS really like the, I mean, we'll get to monsters and bad guys, but everything you're really hitting has a DS. So like,
yeah,
it makes it so clean and easy that, that it does it that way.
Agreed. Additional rules for using magic. Player can sacrifice 1 HP for a plus 2 bonus to their die. HP lost this way can only be healed through resting. So no drinking your magic potion afterwards. Yeah, absolutely. If you're burning through your health for this, you can't just like cheese it and drink a potion right afterwards. Like you gotta go to bed, son. Next one, a very dedicated conjurer can spend weeks prior to adventuring to create a focus or totem. Pretty much this focus totem is just a plus one that you can use when casting spells. I do like that it says weeks. Like, just imagine you're like weird sorceress person in their lab or tower, like cooking up for like 2 weeks before an adventure, you know, bending reality around a single object as a focus. Moving on. A conjurer can only cast a number of spells equal to one plus their level per day. This number is replenished after a night's rest. Spells can be cast as rituals and do not count towards that limited number of spells per day. A spell cast as a ritual takes about an hour of uninterrupted time to prepare. I do like rituals, so that's cool. And I think with like the very open-ended magic in this system, it's like, oh, cool, there is... Like, that gives you a lot of room for, like, making up rituals on the fly. Magic items and potions. Magic can take many strange and terrible forms. Often, great power will come at a cost. Here are a few examples. What may be found or acquired through illicit means. Magic artifacts found during play are described either in the adventurers themselves or by the referee. And it has a list of magic items. You have a healing potion. Very standard. It heals you. Quicksilver, which I love, an illegal and noxious serum, which is popular among conjurers. Once imbibed, the potion restores some of the magical potential. May cast an additional spell within 1 hour of drinking. The side effects of the serum cause the imbiber body chills and fatigue. Save rolls for the next 12 turns or so are at minus one. Any of the items really pop out at you, Ryan?
I mean, they're all cool. Magic Blade's a Magic Blade, you know, it's whatever. Yeah. The Smoldering Eye of Canis is cool. Legendary Circlet, Warn, a conjurer casting fire elemental spells of destruction will cause plus two additional damage. The thing I like about that is, like, it's so easy to just be like, just call it something else. If you have a sage that picked ice, just call it like the Freezing Eye of Canis, and you can just give them that too. Like, it's so, the system is so clean that it's so easy to reskin shit.
Very lightweight.
Mm-hmm. And then next we have fights. Again, I fucking love this page. Jacob Fleming's art is fantastic. Specifically going into fights. So this game does do some interesting different stuff with combat. Obviously, like, it takes Tunnel Goons, which is only like two pages, and turns it into 20 plus pages, which is still very small game. 20, like, A6 pages is very small. But there are some core changes here, which make combat more combat-y, which I both enjoy, but also one of the things I like about Tunnel Goons is the simplicity. So first it is attacking. So when a character attacks, they roll an action roll, and then you add your class modifier and relevant equipment worn or wielded, right? So during an attack action, both combatants are engaged and stand to win the clash. Thus, when counting item bonuses, more than just the weapon which the character is swinging can be included. So let's just go through the example, then I'll talk about it. So it says, as an action, a player character fights an enemy with a DS of 10. The player rolls 2d6 and adds 2 from their brute, 1 from their sword, and 1 from their shield, right? Because you are... This is a part of the thing that, you know, we'll all discuss in a little bit. So you add your sword and your shield. So your total is 12. The difference between 12 and 10 is 2. So the creature takes 2 damage. A non-player character's DS is also their health points. So the enemy's difficulty score is 8. If the roll was 8, then the player character would have lost 2. 2 health. It's the exact same example they use in Tunnel Goons, basically. You're fighting like a mantis, like a robo mantis. Well, yeah, a robo mantis. But basically, this is the thing that, for those that are listening, like, why is 2d6 and then the difference to damage so cool? Because it's not just that, right? This is the beauty and simplicity of Tunnel Goons, which obviously, again, Dungeon Goons is a hack of. If you are fighting a creature whose difficulty score is 10, their health points are also 10, right? And if you roll and get a 12, that creature takes 2 points of damage, which reduces their health to 8, which, don't forget, your difficulty score and your health are tied, which means the next time you attack that creature, the DS isn't 10 anymore, it's 8. Right? If you were to then roll a 10, that's 2 more points of damage. The creature's health and difficulty score would now be 6. One of the best things about this system is that combat is going to be very fast, because you're not just chipping away at something like some bullet sponge whose AC always stays the same. The more you hit something, the easier it is to hit that thing. It's like this feedback loop, right? So the combat will go quick, and once something starts getting hit, it's going to become easier and easier to hit it, right? And one of the things it says in attacking is, so that's the beauty of the system. That's the beauty and cleanliness of the system. The thing with attacking is that when you attack, either you or the bad guy could give or receive damage every time, right? So if you attack something with a DS of 10 and you roll a 12, it takes 2 damage. But if you attack something with a DS of 10 and roll an 8, you take 2 damage. So every time you attack something, there's a risk that you could take damage instead. I really love that. It's really interesting. It's perfect. I love it so much. So then there's initiative in this game, which is interesting, though, and we'll get into why that's interesting in a second. So when combat breaks out, you determine who gets to roll first. Players act first in 3 and 6. So 3 and 6, X and 6, whatever in 6, that's a very old school BX term. That just means that, like, 3 out of 6 times they would go first. It's like saying, if you roll 1, 2, 3, you go first. If you roll 4, 5, 6, they go first. That's it. Surprise. It's just, you can get a surprise. If you do, you get a free action of a round. So actions made during the surprise round have an additional bonus of +1, attacking an enemy from behind as surprise even during combat. So surprise is surprise. You get advantage. The difference, though, where a lot of the differences come in is, first of all, there's no initiative or surprise really listed in Tunnel Goons, right? It's just the attack. But the next thing is the interesting thing. The defending. There is no defense role in Tunnel Goons. So I'll go through it, and then Hunter and I will discuss our thoughts on it. So basically, when an NPC or monster attacks, the players can make a defense role. It's the exact same thing as an attack role, right? The only difference is the NPC or monster is initiating the attack action. The player character is still rolling the dice. You roll with brute if it's close, dex if it's near or far, and add your relevant bonus behind cover, but still within sight, adds a bonus of 2 to your defense, and characters and NPCs completely obscured by cover cannot be hit with an attack. So the difference is, really, in Tunnel Goons, it's all basically player determining, right? Like,
yeah.
If you choose to hit a bad guy, like, that's the, like, a bad guy is not gonna, like, get a chance to hit you. Bad guys don't really get turns in Tunnel Goons as much as I've read it, right? Like, you just get to, you, when you're fighting the bad guy, you make an attack, and it's both things acting, right? Am I wrong? Or am I right?
I am trying to think. So I've run, what is it, the Moldy Unicorn, and then the, like, snail dungeon in Tunnel Goons. I'm trying to think how we did combat, Because I don't think I thought about it. I thought it was very effortless. But I think we did, like you were dueling essentially, right? And so if you swung under the difficulty score, that's how much damage you took. And you swung over it, that's how much damage they took. Maybe that's not how we did it
Yes.
actually.
No, that's how it is. So basically, in Tunnel Goons, all attacks are initiated by the player, right?
Right.
The difference is they brought in some BX action into this game where you actually roll initiative and both sides get a turn, which is kind of leans a little bit more into like the DERF style, because DERF is the same way where like whenever you attack, either side could take damage, but you still get player turns and enemy turns. So it's really interesting to do it that way. I think it really lends itself, I guess, a little bit more to the dungeon crawl aspect, because you might be like fighting more people or something. Like Tunnel Goons to me
Yeah.
is like it's a little bit simpler, not in a bad way, like a clean way, you know? I don't think you're gonna be fighting like a horde of zombies necessarily. That's just not the way the game is written for. But for this, you might, things like that. So it's interesting that they added this element into it where it's not just the player rolls, but like the attack and defense will happen on both, but you can have monster initiated rolls, which is
Yeah.
interesting.
I mean, this is way more. I mean, like you said, like this is more of a combat game than Tunnel Goons is an adventure game. Like, you can have combat, but it is really like, I mean, if you're gonna play Adventure Time as an RPG, I mean, that's what I would use Tunnel Goons.
The thing is, man, if they would have only just done Tunnel Goons for the adventure game. Did you hear that they have like a whole system built for the Adventure Time RPG
Yeah, and they
that apparently
tossed
was
it
super
for,
cool? They tossed it for 5e.
yeah, I
Fuck
did hear that.
off. Fuck
I was like,
off.
cool.
Fuck off. Piece of shit.
I absolutely heard that, and I had the same. I was like, why? My understanding was it was a more narrative focused system. It was like a yes and system.
Like, why would you a narrative adventure? Like,
It
what?
is interesting because Adventure Time is not really like they do kind of fight sometimes, but it's not like crunchy combat, you know?
No, it's not at all. I mean, so anyway, so.
Sorry for the tangent, y'all.
No, sorry. I mean, sorry for our podcast should have just been called Tangent. I don't even know where we were. But basically, that's the big difference here in combat, is that it's not just player initiated roles. It is both player and monster initiated roles. There's also engaged, which basically just means that when you're attacking or defending, you're engaged and you can't do anything else. Like you are in combat with that thing, and that's all you can do. It takes a dexterity roll to disengage. That's all that is. You can subdue, which just means you can attempt. It says, this is interesting. Player characters can attempt to subdue. This is achieved the same as an attack. However, weapons are not considered when counting item points of the action roll. So basically, if you want to choose to subdue an enemy and not kill them, you have to not add your point for your weapons on your attack roll, which I think is great. I think it's a great little clean mechanic.
It is
Ranged
funny
attacks.
how well all of these added mechanics slide on to, like, they fit very well. This feels like a natural extension of the Tunnel Goons idea.
Yeah,
It works well.
I would definitely say that they did a really good job of keeping the like kind of like it the rules feel consistent, as if Nate had decided to add a little bit more, it feels like this is the kind of thing that would have been added on. There's nothing that goes, actually, this one feels a little bit more complicated than all the rest of it. It's all really clean. Ranged attacks, firing a bow is the same. It's just that you use dexterity for it. And if the action is below the enemy's DS, the attacker doesn't lose HP. Instead, the arrow or bolt fails miss. So basically, doing ranged attacks, if you miss, you don't take damage, obviously, because there's nothing to hit you. Like, that's it. And you use dex. Dodging is a reaction of being attacked. A defender can choose to dodge by subtracting 2 from the attacker's roll. Doing so, the defender sacrifices their action for the round, and the attacker doesn't lose any HP for a failed attack. So basically, you can just subtract 2 from the enemy, but you're not. Like that's your action for the round. Like you have chosen to not take an action that round if you want to dodge, which is great if you're low on health. multiple enemies, when the player is fighting multiple enemies, subtract one for each additional one. So if you're 1v2ing, all of your rolls have a minus one. That's it. Death, when you hit zero, you die. That's it. There's no death saves. There's no nothing. You're just dead. Healing, players regain lost health points by spending the night resting in a secure location. Half the amount of lost HP is restored if the night spent is interrupted or not restful. Health points can also be restored through magic. That's it. Next, we get to monsters and NPCs. Nice lich.
Yeah. Very dusty looking lich. Yeah.
It's a dusty boy.
Yeah. So there are wandering monster rules because this is that type of game. I do love me a wandering monster. It is a 1 in 6 chance of an encounter. There is NPC react. What's up?
You skipped a page.
I skipped a page. Oh, I did skip a page. Wow. Yeah. A monster DS. So monsters and or NPCs have a difficulty score, which represents their health and their ability to fight, very much the standard Tomagund rule. As monsters take damage, their HP goes down, thus reducing the difficulty score, which is one of my favorite things about combat in this, is that it feels like as you beat up something, it gets beat up. It's worse at like attacking and like, yeah, like you're fucking bleeding on the ground, bro. Of course you can't attack as well. It makes combat feel quick, first of all, and that like a natural progression. The monster's DS is also used when making any required save rolls. Makes sense. There's a monster stat block example here. We have the Undead Lord, which has a star next to it, which we'll read about here in a second. It has a DS of 12, morale of 10, and it's special. It's magic. Immune to non-magical attacks. So this is a boss monster stat. So for boss monsters, when a particularly nasty foe is encountered, the difficulty score of the NPC does not decrease with damage taken. The boss monster may be marked with a star by their name to differentiate them from regular monsters.
I love that. I think that's such a good, clean thing. It's just like, if they're a boss, you do have to kind of bullet sponge them a little bit.
Yeah.
But it makes sense. Like, it feels like such a clean way to differentiate them and also increase difficulty, much like the rest of the system. Like, it just feels like you're just like, oh my God, like it's so simple, but so good, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting. And I've been going through some Tomagund hacks recently, but like, keeping it simple is like very much the goal of hacking tunnel goons. Like, that is the strength of it, is the simplicity. And it's funny how much depth, and I've already said this episode, but I'll say it again, is added onto this game through added rules, but how it never really leaves the realm of being simple, you know?
Yep.
Special abilities. Some monsters have a special ability, which will be detailed in their stat block. Boss monsters will always have, or will always feature a special ability. It's a boss. It should have a special. All your bosses should have specials in almost every system you play. Moving on.
Hey, buddy, are you a boss? Because you're special.
Thanks. Special Ed. wandering monsters. Yes, like I said before, when I skipped that page, this is the type of game where you would hex crawl or you would crawl through rooms. So there is a wandering monster chance. It is a 1 in 6, like the classic. I bump it up in my games to 2 and 6 because fuck my players. NPC reaction rolls. There are reaction rolls.
Same it's as good. Every fucking game ever. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're good. And sometimes I use them, and also sometimes I don't. But they are there if you need them and you want to introduce some chaos to monster or NPC reactions. And then morale. Monsters have a morale score between 2 and 12. Higher morale scores indicate more fearless monsters. Unintelligent undead monsters such as skeletons also have morale. The referee rolls 2d6 and compares the result to the monster's morale score. If the result is higher than the morale, the monster will surrender or attempt to flee. As their morale goes down, it's easier to roll over them. I would set parameters for this. Like, I mean, just at my own table, I don't think it needs in this game, but like, yeah, at 50% health or fighting force, at 25% health or fighting force, like that's when they roll morale. easy, simple morale roll.
You know what? Let me tangent real quick on another reason
tangent,
why.
Do it. It's a new name of our podcast now. It's Tangent.
Why 5e kind of sucks? It's because let me randomly hit like five tangents here. When I was running my D&D group that had like 300 plus members, when we wouldn't just let anyone GM. I would want people to like there'd be experienced GMs in the group, mm-hmm. and if you were a new GM that had never GM before, to like sit down. And I even like wrote up a thing on like teaching new GMs how to GM, and it was really just like the super basics, right? Like of just like helping them prep easier and things like that. One of the things I wanted everybody to do before they would be able to join this quote unquote class and run games for people is to read the player's handbook cover to cover and read the DMG cover to cover. That knocked out like 90% of people that wanted to GM because they wouldn't just sit down and read it. And I never will understand why. But the DMG has a bunch of quote unquote optional rules in it that fix a lot of what's wrong with 5e. That would get rid of like a quarter of the homebrew on DM's Guild if people just read the fucking DM's Guild or read the DM's guide. One of the things in there is like morale. And so many people have this like whole thing on like, why do monsters always fight to the death? They don't. You just don't use the morale rule.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, I'm going to be honest, I've run a lot of 5e and I have not read the DMG page cover to cover, but I 100% have been like, yeah, there are a bunch of like guards, they're regular people. When you kill all of them except two, yeah, those two guys don't want to fight anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. Which also gave my murder hobos a really interesting scenario in which like, okay, are we normal people that let this person run away? Or are we psychopaths that are going to just kill this guy mm-hmm. who's crying about his daughter? And you know what? They were psychopaths a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, morale's good. Use it. That's it.
Yeah, it is. And I think this, like, once again, this stays with that 2d6 roll, and that's what you roll. You're rolling over, yeah. Right?
Well, this game is basically like a super simplified version of BX with tunnel goons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with tunnel goons. Like, that's what this is.
I'm into it.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot.
Some example monsters. Great. Sorry, I zoned out there. Huge spider, which we saw in the cover photo. We love huge spider. They have a special. They're poisonous. Which the, you know, when they attack, you save versus brute. Good stuff. You know.
Yeah. Sure, I'll take it. Adventuring.
I didn't know who's doing it. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, a little bit about this is just super easy stuff at the end. This is just, it's called adventuring. It's just like wrapping up all of the extra, like all of, if you're going to add in all of the things they've already added in, you're going to add in all this shit too, right? So time Absolutely. And turns, basically it just says you got rounds and turns and you can extrapolate that into hours and days and blah, 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 blah. X and six, we've already talked about. It's just the chance and six of a thing happening. Movement and distance. You got close, near, far, and distant. And there's squares with it if you want to use squares, and that's it. On their turn, players can move somewhere nearby as part of an action. Performing that action at any stage of the move, they may skip their action and move somewhere far instead. I do think so movement and distance is an interesting thing here. I think this isn't a bad spot to put that movement turn, but it might have been better in fights to let people know how far they can move.
I agree. It's not awful. Yeah. No. I'm not angry that it's here.
It's movement in the movement section, and the whole thing's only 24 pages, right. But it's fine. Overland distance, it talks about near and far overland stuff. Talks about getting lost, the chances and getting lost and stuff like that. There's a wilderness weather table, which I dig. It's only three things. It's mild weather, storm on the horizon, or a sudden storm. I'm totally fine with that. I really like that. Storm effects are listed here. Advancement and XP are listed here, which is interesting. So in Tunnel Goons, you advance, level up every two game sessions. Each level raise a class score by one and raise either health or inventory by one. The difference here with this is that you get XP at the end of an objective and overcoming challenges at the end of a session. So objectives are the quests or missions a player set out to complete and are worth 1 to 2 points. So basically this is saying like, you set an objective at the beginning. It could be clear, beat this dungeon boss, whatever. You assign 1 or 2 points to that. That's your XP. Challenges can vary from 1 to 3 points. Hard is one, very hard is two, nearly fatal is three. So a lot of times you're going to get one or two. Once you have accumulated 10 of those points, you can level up. The interesting thing about that is you could have like a somewhat, not necessarily West Marches style, but if you have players that like miss a section or two, they could be 1 or 2 points behind, which I don't mind in this system. It's not like you'd be that far off. But basically every 10 points, you can do what Tunnel Goons does, which is raise one score by one and either raise your health or inventory score by one. So it's definitely a slower advancement, but I think that makes sense in the context of this game. And then there's an adventure in the back, and that's it.
Yeah.
Gygar's
Gate. And it comes with adventure in a pack as well. I mean, start with two.
Yeah. So again, I didn't download it, but the other adventure you get is called Shrine of the Scorpion Lords, and it's got this cool, like, warrior. It's like a centaur, but if the bottom half was a scorpion, so it's terrifying.
Yeah, it's actually terrifying. Centaurs are a little off-putting, too, by the way. We all act like it's so normal because we're used to the imagery, but, like, if you really met a centaur in person, you would be uncomfortable. So
yeah. I saw this one video once, like someone asked, like, how do centaurs run? Do they do this with their arms or what? You know what I mean? And there was this random black and white video. Maybe it was from like an old movie or something, but it showed a centaur running and the centaur just had its arms like straight down its side still. And the upper part was kind of like leaned back and it was doing almost like fucking Kubrick eyes and just like with the horse running. It was terrifying, honestly. I'm like, if I saw that coming at me.
If I was a centaur and I was running, I'd do the Naruto arms, you know?
But that's the thing, is like your bottom half is running, so your top half could be doing like all sorts of shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just pointing, so, waving, flailing.
Yeah. But like you can lean forward into like a Superman.
This is the kind of hard-hitting discussions you'll get on the Weekly Scroll.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is you're either upright, you're doing the Superman, or you're doing the Naruto. I really don't think there's other options.
Just like this.
Yeah, but like leaning forward.
Crossed arms, you know?
And then, but then you could do it two hands up when you want to go faster.
This is really...
like, I would feel like I would want to like do like a swimming thing, you know? Like, anyway, so...
For like 1 second, I was going to be like, how did we get here? And then I realized it's because of the Scorpion Centaur guy on the cover of the Tomb of the... or Shrine of the Scorpion Lord.
Yeah.
I really want to run that adventure. I tried to do a pickup game last week, actually. And I just text people who were around. I was like, hey, you guys want to play a game like in like 2 hours? Nope. No one's as cool as I am, so.
No one's cool.
My girlfriend was down. Cool. I'm like, thank you.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Review scores. Yeah. Advanced Dungeon Goons. So, obviously, it's a zine. It's pretty small. So, so let's just hop straight into this one. So, for those that don't know, this is 3 instead of 5. Visuals, rule set, and vibes. Visuals are all the visuals. That's layout and art and everything all combined into one. Rule set is a rule set. Vibes are it's how much we want to play the game once we close it. And a lot of things can lower the vibes, like bad visuals can lower the vibes, tweaks in the rule set can lower the vibes, or maybe we just don't like it very much, but it's a very abstract score. So visually, what are your thoughts on this?
I think visually this is a great little zine. Like, I mean, the art, obviously, we talked about the art, the headers. Like that weird one, like really cool, like, yeah, single pixel font. I mean, it's also incredibly readable as you go through it as well. The font choices were great. The color choices are great. It's mostly too calm all the way through. I think it is just too calm all the way through. Mm-hmm. But for this, it works great. It feels very reminiscent of like a modern retro clone kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think visually this is like very good.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, for a little landscape A6 24 page little thing. I mean, that's the thing. It's like you could throw this in your pocket, roll up to the homie's house, and be playing Dungeon Games with this thing. But artistically,
there is a lot of art in it too. Actually, like even just like the spot art and like page under stuff. Like for how small it is, I'm like, there's actually like a good amount in here too.
Yeah. I mean, there really is. You know, I love the full page chapter beginnings. They're gorgeous. But yeah, I mean, they really do a good job of like never really, even in such a small book, never leaving any part without, like, you know, they got trees and stuff. They never really leave any part where the pages never feel, I mean, even the advancement XP, he had this girl that's got like her arms like kind of filling the whole page. So
yeah,
they never really leave any part of it. It never feels crowded, but it also never feels empty. Like it's cozy all the way through.
You know?
Yeah. I think it's a great balance. I mean, I again, and Jake Fleming's art is fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
I think it fits so well for this too. I don't know. I'm probably at like a solid 8 on this easy.
I am too. I also am just realizing this as we're kind of like talking about going through it. The pages are all white with black text and some orange text, right? But the original playing the game structure page, which is the like foundational rules for the game, is a black page. Like it's like a standalone page. And that's all, like, that page I think is completely Tunnel Goons. But just,
you know, yeah. Yeah,
interesting visual choice that, like, on, if you open up and you look at the most eye-catching page, which is just all black, you can immediately understand the foundation for how everything in the game works. So, very cool design choice.
Yeah, and I mean, and it's really consistent with the colors, obviously, all the way through, too.
Yes, like, absolutely.
The black is the same black. The orangey red is the same orangey red. It really is, like, only 3, maybe 4 colors because of some of the
page numbers, though. You know, like,
yeah, that's that did bug me a little bit throughout. Is like,
it's an interesting decision. Yeah, there's not, it's 22 because the PDF counts the front and back cover as a page.
Yeah. But I mean, even with 22 pages, I wouldn't mind knowing which page is 13 and which page is 18. You know,
I wouldn't hate it.
I would enjoy it. I would prefer if this had that, but it doesn't bother me enough that I would even reduce a point for it. I mean, it's such a small scene.
I agree. It's more just an interesting choice. So
Yeah. There's also no table of contents, but again, on a zine, the small, like, it's not. Yeah. It would be such a waste of a page. Rule set. Obviously, you know, at its core, it's one of our favorite games of all time.
This is a great. On it? This is a great example of how to successfully hack a system. You're like. Mm-hmm. The principles of the original system are absolutely still here. It is lightweight. It follows that 2d6 over difficulty score, that difficulty score being health or like a resource in and of itself. And it just adds the stuff that you would need to make this like a successful BX dungeon crawler, like retro clone. Mm-hmm. And I think it works really well. I love the magic. I think the magic is great. I think there's like the original like magic hack for this is really just like spells that have a DS, but like a free form open, pick your realm, and then you guys negotiate what you think the difficulty is, if there even is one. Yeah. I hate this game. I obviously hate the fuck out of this. So. Yeah,
obviously. It's terrible. for real though, like, so it is a hack, which, I mean, you know, it's fine. But like you said, it does it so well. It successfully hacks one of the best, you know, rules light games out there. And it's such a good hack too, because I'll tell you right now, if I was ever going to run any BX anything, I would just run it in Dungeon Goons.
I'm sitting here thinking like I have a bunch of old school essentials adventures, on my bookshelf that I really want to run, but I don't really want to run OSE, for all of it at least. And I'm like, oh yeah, I could just take this. Like, you just look at the monster, like, dictate how hard you think it is. I mean, it's easy, moderate, hard, or very hard, right?
Yeah.
And that's
it. Yeah, you could just, it wouldn't be too hard to come up with a good math for HD to DS. You know what I mean? Like, it would be pretty straightforward, I think. So what are your thoughts on the rule set?
Oh, pretty high. Pretty easily an 8, and I could probably do a 9.
Yeah, I mean, here's my only thing that would make me think 8 instead of 9.
Okay.
Is that while they did successfully hack this, in both of our opinions, it really is just Tunnel Goons and BX together, right? There's nothing that's really innovative, I guess, is how I would say. Like, there's nothing in here where, like, they do everything well by making everything, like, the simplest, cleanest, like, version of it. but there's nothing, there's not, like we just said, you could play OSC with this right now. So it's not, there's nothing like.
Yeah, you really could.
I think that's the only thing, is that there's nothing in here new. It's just super well adapted old stuff, you know? And I think that's the thing that puts me in my head towards like an 8.
I'm fine being 8 with this. Okay. I would argue that I think that the ability to play any of the 50 fucking dungeon games I have behind me with this almost immediately is a strength.
You know what? But... You won me. Let's go 9.
there we go.
Vibes.
Listen, it's not that I, listen, just if you're out there listening, you're like, I love running OSC. It's not that I don't want to run OSC. I don't always want to run OSC though, you know?
There you go. There you go. Like, sometimes it would be nice, yeah, to just do, like, you know, Halls of the Blood King or whatever without having to, like, do the entire fucking thing, you know? Vibes.
Oh, I think this is strong vibes. I think, for me, I think vibes for this is probably about 7. 7 or 8, like, and I think this, it's funny because I think I just said this was a strength, and now I'm going to say for the vibe, I think it's a weakness. It's like, you're right, it doesn't really... like have anything where it's like, oh, this is super specific to advanced Dungeon Goons. Like, I want to play this. I think I'm actually probably at an 8 because I really do want to play this. And I do like this as a way to lightweight hack a bunch of games that I already like that are maybe more rules heavy. But once again, yeah, like you said, there's nothing that it does that is very individual to it.
Yeah, I think I'm about an 8 on this too, which is still really fucking high. 8, 9, 8 is crazy high for this. But exactly what you just said, like, I do, how do I say, I love this game, but one thing we've said a bunch and I think really sums it up is that, like, I don't necessarily, I do want to play this, but like you said, there's nothing that makes me go, oh my God, this is so cool, I'm going to play it so bad. My general thought on it more is it's so well done. And if I ever need a dungeon system, this is the one I will use.
Absolutely.
It doesn't necessarily make me go, I want to use this right now for whatever, I don't care, you know? But if someone rolls up to me with like fucking B2 or something, like, I'll just be like, let's do it in Dungeon Goons, you know? So that, I think that's what it is I really, I enjoy it mechanically. But there, it doesn't have that little something that makes me go, fuck, dude, if I had 3 people in 2 hours, I would do it right now, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but again, fantastic game. I love it. It's one of my favorite Tunnel Goons hacks. It is the dungeon game that I would choose to play. And I think it does, everything that you need from anything. And I also think that this would be a fantastic, I would put this in my top like 3 or 4 play this instead of 5e please games, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally.
Or as an introduction to tabletop gaming at all. Like I said, like this and Mouse Ritter would, and maybe like one other would be, oh, you've never played a tabletop game? Let's run this and you'll understand the rest of the games out there. So it's fantastic. If you get a chance to back Castle Elkinstone, the campaign's over. If pre-orders open, we'll let you know in the future. I don't know if late pledges are going to be a thing. Definitely go check that out. You can find all of the links below. But Jacob Fleming is at gelatinouscubism.com. They run Gelatinous Cubism Press. Go support them. Everything that they do is fantastic.
The blog is great too.
Yeah. The blog's great. The comics are great. The games are great. Check it out. Again, you can buy the whole like hanger pack of this for like $12 at Exalted Funeral. I highly recommend you go grab it. Again, the fact that you can get a great game, 2 adventures, and a set of dice for $12 is insane. If we were doing this as like a price thing, that would have to be damn near like a 9 or a 10.
Yeah, it'd be pretty high.
All right. That's it. ZineQuest, thank God, is in the past. There's a couple campaigns that are still cruising into March, but we're not talking about them anymore because it broke my brain. So ZineQuest is done. Successful.
Woo!
Good job.
Woo, we did it. Great job, Ryan. It was all you.
You know, we did. I put a thing up on the old Twatters about what we did in the month. I think it was like 7 actual plays, 12 or 13 interviews and spotlight, like 24 different games. And I think that feels good. That feels good. I think we did okay. We had a lull a little bit in week 3. I think we skipped episodes entirely, but you know.
Oh, we both got sick.
Yeah, that's what it was. That's what it is.
Yeah, we both got sick. The busiest month we have of the year for the show. So. You
know, even then though, you know, there's a lot of I'm gonna just let that one go. So that's it. I don't know what we're doing next week. We'll talk about it. I do think that we're thinking about, for those that the longtime listeners, I think we're talking about doing some like like themed months, almost. Like we've tossed around the idea of maybe bringing maybe doing like a month where we do 4 games by creators that are artists as well as designers. We've talked about doing some other interesting things, so you might see that in the future. For those listening too that actually give a shit about our actual plays, Josh Demansky will be coming back sooner than later on the show. We're going to restart side quests, and that, for those that listen, there are episodes where we do an actual play of a game we've reviewed with an emphasis on teaching the game. So that way you can listen to the review and the AP, get a good sense of how the game is and how the game runs. So we'll be starting those up again, either at the end of this month or the beginning of this month. Other than that, don't expect a ton of interviews for a while. Don't expect a ton of actual plays for a while. Except for next week, we're going to be running with Christian Sorrell, with me, Castle, on Tuesday. But we're really going to be taking a backseat and just focusing on our reviews for a while, and just getting refocused. So that is our episode for today. Hunter, you're wonderful.
Brian, how are you?
Damn. We almost hit like the hour mark on this one, which is crazy.
Wow.
We'll see what happens when I edit down the end in the beginning. So, you'll find our other links, Linktree/weekly scroll. Have a good day. We will see you all later. Bye.
Bye.